primarily our industry here in the United States, there is always, I say, there is a couple challenges that we always face. One of it, I think, is probably one of the more critical and important is commodity pricing. I think that the industry face an ongoing challenge as things evolve across the world, markets changing and adapting to finding ways to make things more economic, right? To be able to maintain a competitive cost of the overall pump, cost per pound of feed is one of the most challenging things. So the biggest thing is how we adapt to finding opportunities, finding other type of source of alternative products that can help to lower the cost, especially the cost of grains, and of course, as well, the cost of fats.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/ag. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Feed Science Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I am Wilmer Pacheco, and I am an extension specialist and associate professor in the Department of Poultry Science at Auburn University. We are excited to bring you the latest insights and discussions in the feed industry, so get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. So today I'm excited to be joined by Cesar Menendez from Smithfield Foods, which Smithfield Foods is one of the leading pork producers in the United States. And Cesar brings extensive experience in feed manufacturing with a strong focus on optimizing performance, efficiency, and feed quality in commercial operations. So in this episode, we will dive into practical insights from the field and discuss current challenges in feed production. So, Cesar, welcome to the show.
Wilmer, thank you for the opportunity. It's an honor to be back. And I'm excited to as well to have a discussion with you and continue to provide knowledge in the way we can for the rest of the industry.
It's always, like a pleasure having you in the show, Cesar. We know each other for more than almost 20 years right now. So for the people that don't know you, can you talk about your professional experience and what are your current responsibilities at Smithfield?
Yeah, absolutely. That's correct, Wilmer. It's been over 20 years, and you were part of that moment, of that decision, that brought me into the industry, especially here in the United States. So I always will be very thankful and appreciative of you being a key at that moment back at that time, 2008, right? When I started into the feed industry here in the United States. So yeah, Wilmer. So born and raised in Guatemala, went to college in Honduras right after college. Had the opportunity to start working with the Smithfield. So I started working at Smithfield back in 2008. It's crazy to think about it, right? But it's going to be 20 years. Now with the Smithfield all my time, and obviously last 2 years, before we graduated, out of college in Honduras, we spent some time in a small feed mill down in Honduras, kind of where, the passion for feed manufacturing started. But then, right after college, like I said, I started working with the Smithfield in feed manufacturing. One of our feed mills down in Loringburg, North Carolina, where we were manufacturing, obviously, about 10,000 tons of feed a week, and that went for about 7-8 years. And I got the opportunity to move to corporate and work on as a director of technical feed manufacturing and technical support. Primarily, the focus was to assess conditions in the mills, work on projects, improvements. And that's where we developed a kind of what I call a sustainable plan to improve the overall facilities. But you know, making it more reliable, but also dependable for the amount of feed we manufacture, and as well assisting on expansions and retrofitting, all kind of things related for that on all our feed mills in the United States, but also the two feed mills that at that point we had in Mexico. For the last 3 years, I have the honor to lead the feed manufacturing group for the Smithfield that involves about 13 feed mills across the United States, and also part of our group is two bakery plants where we manufacture bakery meal using some actual baked products, you know, snacks and things like that that are not necessarily, and, you know, have enough time to get to reach to the final shelf, or that, you know, with short life, shelf life, we take those products, or there is some issues that may not necessarily suitable for human consumption, but they're good and safe enough for animal consumption, of course. But so we depackage a lot of those products and make that meal that we utilize as well in our feed mills. Obviously, you know, between the department, we have a technical support team. We also have a quality department to secure and to assure that all the products or all the feeds that we're manufacturing are meeting the expectation from a nutritional standpoint, but as well for the proper animal performance. So that's in summary, Wilmer, about me, our group consists of about 400 people across the United States. Like I said, between 13 feed mills, two bakery plants, and a centralized feed lab as well. So that's me.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
Excellent, Cesar. And you know, like something that I see that you bring to the table is like all that experience that you have, like just going to different feed mills, seeing like likely different equipments, and working with different people. So from your perspective, Cesar, what do you think are the biggest challenges faced by the feed industry today?
Yeah, this is a very good question to start, Wilmer. You know, yes, I have the opportunity and the blessing, right, to get to see different facilities as well across the world. You know, always being in several locations in Europe. Recently, we were in Canada, but as well to South America and, of course, in Central America. But I think primarily our industry here in the United States, there is always, I say, there is a couple challenges that we always face. One of it, I think, is probably one of the more critical and important is commodity pricing. I think that the industry faces an ongoing challenge as things evolve across the world, markets changing and adapting to finding ways to make things more economic, right? To be able to maintain a competitive cost of the overall pump cost per pound of feed is one of the most challenging things. So the biggest thing is how we adapt to finding opportunities, finding other type of source of alternative products that can help to lower the cost, especially the cost of grains. And of course, as well, the cost of fats in the feed has been one of the most expensive parts of the feed. And of course, soybean meal. So it's always about how, as a meal manager, setting the mentality to be open for a challenge, to be open to manage another type of ingredient that may not necessarily have had the opportunity to handle before, or that maybe because of some sort of incident in the past, there was an issue in the meal and now we don't want to use that product anymore. But that product now is bringing value. It's bringing some special value that maybe when you put it in perspective to say, okay, it's going to save us this much per ton of feed, but it may cost us a little bit more in the mill to be able to handle, but it still is economically, it makes a lot of sense to use it in the mill, because at the end of the day, it's allowing us to provide a competitive cost per pound of feed for the final consumer or for the grower. So that's what I think that is an industry wide. We always hear about talking about, hey, you know, finding other opportunities, finding more cookie mill, finding more dry distillers possible as a way to being able to maintain and stay competitive across the industry. Another big challenge is, you know, that I see across the industry, it is that in a lot of these facilities that we have today have been operating Wilmer for about, you know, maybe 25 up to 40 or 50 years old feed mills. And I think that one of the things is always a challenge is that in we always see the feed mill as the cost center. The feed mill costs too much. If you spend an extra 25 cents per ton of feed a month, it's a big deal, right? We make a big deal, but we don't understand or realize the importance of the feed mill. The feed mill, yes, everything in the industry, or when you are in the meat industry, everything is important. Everyone that is involved in the process plays an important role. But the feed mill at the end of the day is, in my opinion, the base of everything, because that is at the end what is going to translate as the value added product, right? Those pounds per feed, those ingredients will transform into the actual product and the value that we're looking into it. But because of that, you know, we don't see that necessarily. We always want to find ways or easy ways to lower the cost in the feed mill. But we're not looking in the whole perspective to say, okay, let's analyze it and review it on the overall total cost per ton of the ingredient, the transportation and everything. Everything is important to find savings, don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, the maintaining the feed mill, the housekeeping of the feed mill plays such an important role, because I think it's what is going to continue to evolve and make the difference to be able to retain and maintain people. So staying ahead, Wilmer, of the feed mill to maintain and keep up with the equipment that it has started to wear out, to improve the overall housekeeping and conditions of the feed mill is one of the challenges, right? Not just because you have to work with the allocated amount of money that you get because of budget planning, which is totally understandable, but it's also how fast you can act before an issue could happen, right? So I think that's something that every mill manager across everywhere in multiple industries faces today. It's always is I don't know how fast I can act to be able to solve all these problems, because all this equipment is already worn out. It's old. I have a problem. So I think that a lot of times I encourage everybody is let's work on a plan. Let's have a plan of where you want to be from now in 5 years. But that 5 years is an ongoing, right? It's an ongoing changing. So it never stops. And you adjust it according, you prioritize it. What is the top 10 times that is causing me today that I need to address today so I can be a little bit better? And then you move to the next. Because if you try to tackle the entire thing in big, it may be impossible. One, you still got to make feed, because doesn't matter what and where we are, we have to make the feed to be able to continue to maintain a sustainable a process in the overall business, especially if you are an integrator, right? So working in a plan, staying ahead, challenging not just your team in the mill, but challenging the people at corporate or the people above you as a manager to understanding the importance of driving and being better and having a more reliable and dependable feed mill. I think that convincing to that and getting the people to engage into that conversation to support the efforts that the females are doing is one of the challenges I see as well. So I would say, Wilmer, those are probably the two challenges that always are facing us right now. Obviously, people is another challenge, but I think those two things are one of what I call the top challenges that I hear all the time across the entire industry.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Like, and I'm glad, Cesar, that you are always looking for opportunities, right, to reduce our feed costs and increase the efficiency of the feed mill. Because if we are more efficient as an industry, then we are going to be able to put like meat at a lower price in the shelf, right? So the general public benefits, and that's commendable. And I also agree with you that we need to move away from seeing the feed mill as a cost center, because, you know, like sometimes we say, well, if we change the hammers more often, we are going to increase our cost. If we change the screens more often, we are going to increase the cost. Or if we change the dice and the rolls more often, we increase the cost. And sometimes it's not necessarily, because if we are working with equipment that is, you know, like beyond the shelf life, then we are spending more time in electricity, right? So we might be decreasing preventive maintenance, but we might be increasing the industry, not the energy costs.
A lot of times too, people doesn't realize, you know, that's a very good point too as well, Wilmer, is that people doesn't realize that making those decisions, it might end up costing you a lot of more money at the end of the day and just don't making you any better, right? A lot of people, it's a question sometimes, they say, well, we're just going to change a simple light, for example, right? A simple light that they say, well, I don't know if I need to get back and put an explosion-proof light. And I say, well, be careful with that, right? Because you may gonna create now a big problem down there in the row in your feed mill. So understanding all those things and saying, well, you know, that light fixture, because it's explosion proof, is obviously 10 times more expensive than a regular light. But yes, but at the end of the day, you need it because it's to protect the overall building. But Wilmer, another thing is we always discuss with our teams is that it's when you make a decision and you make it for the right, the good thing is as long as you make it right today, you should not have to come back and have to deal with that problem again, because then you can move to the next thing to be able to continue to drive improvement in the business. But as well, looking the overall cost of the feed, right? Don't look about just if it costs you $10 to make a ton of feed in the mill. Look about the other $250 that costs with ingredient costs, right? That you can say, well, look, I may need to spend an additional 50 cents in the mill, but look, we're going to see figure it out how we can maybe find an additional product or utilize a little bit more of an alternative product so I can maybe bring $5 on the overall total cost saving for the facility. But you know what? This additional 50 cents now that I'm investing into the mill is going to help us to be better, okay? To maybe retain people more, because they will love the environment where they're working. They love to being efficient. They love to have a weekend off, for example, too, as well. So those things is where I think we need to kind of think about it a little bit different what we have think in the past in feed manufacturing, Wilmer.
Yeah, and we are discussing just from the production side too, but there are a lot of other things that fall into place, like OSHA, you know, how you are complying with FDA. And sometimes, you know, to comply with all those rules, you were talking about lighting. We need to have, like, good lighting around the equipment, you know, for OSHA purposes. So, yeah, I think, I do remember when I was working in the feed mill in Laurinburg, when we were working together, and something that I liked was that every day was different. But something that I do remember and I would like to discuss with you is, like, one of the things that we struggled the most was with finding labor, you know, and retaining labor. So how are you guys, you know, like I left, you know, the industry, you know, like more than 15 years ago after I went to the university, and now I'm a faculty at Auburn. But like now, how are you addressing, you know, like workforce availability and training and also the retention of personnel in feed milling operations?
Yeah, very good question, Wilmer. I think that that's obviously another big challenge, right? That obviously it is everybody's facing in the industry is finding quality people, as a lot of other industries are coming around us. The especially on the technological the tech industry, you know, call them a data center or a lot of those things that have been evolving around us today, other type of high skill type jobs, the market of people wanting to work in feed milling is becoming even less and less and more limited. So I think one of those key things, Wilmer, is that one thing that I think that it has been clear in what I see it is that people love if they have to come to work to a clean feed mill and an efficient feed mill, and also they get treated well. Right. So those are key three things that also not just because you treat them well, but also you invest on them, either on training, either help them in supporting to be better. So what the way we're thinking now is that people, that person that it is in front of a feed mill is not just capable of just running the feed mill. He can also possibly even work on the feed mill. So that has an added value of people that then also you can compensate a little better, right? For that people because they're capable. That's one of those things I see, especially like in Europe, right? Europe is also one of those things that eventually we're going to be there in the US with a lot of limited people in high cost of labor around us where, you know, females operating with just two people, right? But these two people that are in that female, like highly skilled people that obviously have a knowledge, have the understanding, have the education, right? They're capable to work on from simply just to housekeeping up to being able to do a complex work in an MCC room or the automation system or work and tear apart completely a pellet mill and put it back together with no problem, right? So we continue to work in emphasizing that if we can maintain an efficient and clean feed mill, people will like to work and people will stay longer with us when they see it also that you continue to invest. You see that they have to work. If they see that they have to work all the time in the same thing because it creates a problem, they got to sweep the same thing every time over and over. People just leave because they don't want to deal with that type of stuff anymore, right? Because our mentality, the new generations thinks differently. So I think that making sure that you are listening to the problems, that you are also implementing corrective actions into the issues is what is going to help you to maintain. And then the other thing is they making sure that people know that you're investing into them. You are supporting them for their training. You are encouraging them to go to take a training somewhere to learn more about something, to even take them to see another feed mill, right? To all those type of things are small things that really make the difference to retain and to maintain. I think that's probably in general perspective, Wilmer, one of those things that is important to think about. So again, it's making sure that you listen to people, you're investing into the people, but also you are maintaining a decent place, adequate place for the people to work. And people will not leave, I can tell you that. And as long as you respect them, I mean, obviously you compensate accordingly, people will stay with you. People will stay for the good as long as you continue to invest into the people.
And that's good, you know, because you have been talking about, like, you know, sometimes we see the feed mill as a cost center, but we forget that every time that we open that mixer, if it's now I think we have like mixers that are like 12 tons maybe capacity. The 14, biggest one that I have,
14 ton mixer.
So every time that you open that mixer and close again every 4 minutes, then you just multiply those 14 by like $300, and that's what you are spending. So every time you are spending more than $30,000, you know. And then I like, you know, like the what you're saying, that at the end of the day, you know, like making an extra investment to improve the operation or making an extra investment in paying, you know, a course for one employee to go and pay $300. At the end of the day, is nothing, because those employees are going to come back with other experience, because, you know, like in these trainings, they don't only have the opportunity to listen to the speakers, but they also have the opportunity to interact with other fellows. And at the end of the day, they are just going to bring more value back to the company.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes, Wilmer, the simple act of you deciding today as a manager that you're going to buy lunch for everybody and you're going to sit down with them and have a simple and good conversation can go a long way. Well, because you're creating a moment with the people, and the people will remember that for a little while, that they spend lunch with you, that they talk about it. And you know what? They probably brought up a problem that you may not necessarily were aware. Yes, you know, I understand the mill manager, you know, you got to walk through your mill, you understand your mill. But sometimes just the moment you sit down, you may learn about something else that the people just being dealing with something, but it's normal, right? Just being normal for them, for the rest of the thing, that it's just they okay, they just learn how to deal with it. But at the end of the day, it's not right. Now you learn about something else, and now you put a plan in action to be able to help it. Because I think that's another thing is that when you change about it, you are not just creating, you know, you're just building a long-term type of people in your facility, right? But you also are trying to change that culture and thinking of how to do things in the mill, right? When you are working with these people, when you invest in them to say, look, we want to get better. We want to change it. We want to completely change that mentality where it was okay just to leave a pile of dust on the floor, or it was okay to maybe ignore a problem, right? No, it's not okay. We want to change that. And by they knowing that you are actually doing something about it and help them to do something about it, you also are helping in driving to change that culture of the way how you're thinking in a feed mill.
And they also, you know, like they feel like we care about them, you know, and if they know like if we care about them, they are going to care more about like the process, you know, and they are the ones that are running the pellet mills. They are the ones that are grinding, mixing, and so on.
Yeah, like you say, I mean, you know, you just can't ignore the fact that you just say every time the mixer open, there is 14 tons and 14 tons time, you know, $300, of course, of cost of commodities. I mean, at the end of the day, you're handling a highly valued commodity, right? That at the end of the day, once it goes out of the door, it also transforms and multiplies that even value of that product at the end of the day, right? Once it goes to the, it converts into meat. So it is handling highly valued product. It's not different, right? That if I'm manufacturing iPhones or I'm building a high type device, or a high, very expensive vehicle out there, at the end of the day, it's also a highly valued commodity. So that can't be any different, right? You have to treat and you have to think about the same way everybody else thinking in that. So you can, you know, you can, obviously the people will appreciate that. People will stay with you and people will do the right thing every time something happens.
And, you know, just another question just to finish the podcast that I would like to ask you, Cesar, is that, you know, like we at the beginning of the podcast, you were mentioning like some of these feed mills are like 25, 40 years old. And then some of these feed mills were designed for a specific capacity. But then the industry continues increasing. Now, you know, like if we are growing like 3% extra per year, in 10 years ago, they had to make 30% less. So, you know, what advice would you give like to mill managers because how they can improve efficiency because, you know, no, without increasing the hours of work, because we got to be very careful too, because if we are just growing 24/7, then we don't have time to do like preventive maintenance, corrective maintenance, and so on. So, what advice would you give to the managers that are listening to the podcast, how they can increase efficiency?
Excellent question, Wilmer. I think one thing I see across everywhere in the industry, Wilmer, is that, again, we go back to the culture there, right? We always being in that old thinking mentality as a operator, so as a manager, where we always like and love to find what I call a sweet spot to run that feed mill. And it's just because they know that if I run at that sweet spot, I don't have problems. And I don't have to go dig that pellet mill, or I don't have to be worried about it. Plus, I need to make feed. And I think that it's not the right way. In my opinion, is you got to think a little bit different in understanding what it should be my capacity and my efficiency on that pellet line and in my feed mill. Where is my base of the ingredients I am utilizing? Where it should be at best, right, to run that equipment at that point? And one other thing is that if you understand that, and now you work your way back to understand what is causing the issue, it's easy, immediate payback that you can put together to justify the replacement of a specific piece of equipment. Is that equipment keeps breaking down? Is that equipment happening something ongoing issues and it's creating me an issue? But if I run it slow, I'll be okay and I don't have to deal with it. Well, it's costing you money now. So thinking about that, understanding what is causing you, addressing it and fixing it, and then you just maximize your operation of your feed mill immediately without necessarily even costing you a lot of more money by just changing the mentality. Maybe I need to just find ways to properly adjust those roles. maybe I need to work with the nutritionist to adjust accordingly that alternative ingredient that is a little bit harder to operate. Yes, it's saving us some good money, but maybe I can find a better what I call a point where I can run my feed mill too as well, efficient, because we have also, Wilmer, I think across everywhere, right? I mean, we have a bad about idling. It's just because, well, I'm full, I'm just going to run low speed today. No, that running a feed mill in idle is the most expensive thing you can do, okay? Because it's costing you. So I always, the always thinking is, no, run efficient as much as you can. Yes, you have to work with your transportation to figure out ways to maximize both the feed mill, but as well the transportation asset, but as well, Wilmer, to think about it, how I can make sure that also I can run as effective, as efficient, as hard as I can, then I stop. And then do something else. Do maintenance, do housekeeping, maybe, you know, allow for your people to go training so they can have a quiet time for training and don't have to worry that they have to run the feed mill, so they can be concentrated on training. So those are things that are important, right? That we continue to work hard, to preach about it, to say, look, make sure that we're running our equipment as efficient as possible. What the manufacturer is telling us where we should be is where we need to get. And then understanding those issues, why they happen, right? And then placing corrective actions. Do no idle equipment. Run as hard, as efficient as you can. Then once you're full of feed or you don't need or you're done with the orders for the week, stop. Make some housekeeping, focus on training for your people or repairing maintenance to make sure things are done properly in your feed mill will immediately bring you and get some payback, Wilmer. That's my feedback for the mill managers out there listening.
Yeah, and you know, like it's very interesting because, you know, like when I look, you know, like you were discussing transportation and that plays a big role, right? And I remember when we were going to take inventory at 3 a.m. and we know that if the finished feed bins were at 75% of capacity, it was better to stop those 3 hours and allow the drivers to continue pulling feed. So when the next shift comes at 6, then they have more space and then they can make longer runs. So yeah, there are different strategies. And also what you were discussing, maybe we might be missing one or two trucks, right? If we put another one or two trucks, we can move the feed faster out of the facility. But you know, like another thing that maybe you can tell us is, what is the, like when you are running the pellet mill, what will be like a good percentage motor load, 80-85% motor load? Because sometimes, you know, sometimes if it's running at 60%, like you're saying, it's like, okay, it's not going to plug at 60%, but we can go with higher throughput without, you know, like plugging the pellet mill. So
absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think, Wilmer, that there is not necessarily a good, let's call him a good motor load, right? I think it depends, in my opinion, of generally what is the overall pellet mill capacity, right? And a lot of things, you know, also has to do with how thicker your die in the pellet mill is, how you are focusing on pellet quality, right? But, you know, for example, in my opinion, like on hog finisher feed, I call them the math, in my opinion, is that you need to be about 10 per 100 horsepower, you need to be about 10 tons per hour, right? So if you had a 500 pellet mill, that pellet mill should do at least 50 tons an hour. That's kind of in the rule of thumb, a lot of people call it that way, especially in the hog industry. Obviously, in poultry, that may change it. That may go up to 12 or 15 tons per hour per 100 horsepower. And it's all about what is the capacity where I want it to be, Wilmer. But typically I would say, you know, I want to get that equipment as much as we can. So typically about 80-85%. That equipment needs to perform. I mean, it's designed for that. I'm not saying you need to be all the way to 90, but in my opinion, when you are below 60% and you're running a pellet mill at 60%, you're idling, in my opinion. you're idling, you're wasting money, it's costing you a lot more to make it. Hammer mills is one of those things that I see always an opportunity in a lot of places in the in our industry, across the entire industry, Wilmer, is that we love to idle hammer mills. We love to leave the hammer mills running at low speed, or we forget them because that's not the attention. We worry about a hammer mill when the moment I start on a stream pulling corn, now I'm slowing my batching down. Now I cannot keep up with my pellets, right? That's when we're then looking to the hammer mills. No, we need to look more consistently, running as efficient as we can, about 85%, not just because 60% is what I have seen it running, and that's because we like it there. No, run it as efficient as you can. Understand what your capabilities are, what the expectations from quality standpoint are, and then you can make a decision to say, this is what it should be, my what I call the T-max, my overall, or the overall equipment efficiency, or my equipment in, involving quality as well. What is that number that should make sense to maximize the efficiency of the feed mill?
Yeah, and you know, something else like I can point out, just to add to the conversation, is that sometimes when we are pelleting, we just focus on what is happening in the pellet die, and we forget what is happening in the conditioner. How is the feed entering? If it's porching or it's not porching, you have like changes in motor load. And also another opportunity that I'm at least seeing these days is like the opportunity to increase the pellet size. You know, like if you have like a chicken, and a chicken can consume 4 millimeter pellets, that chicken can consume 4.4 millimeter pellets too. But when you go to that 4.4, you get like extra open area in that pellet die. So you can increase the efficiency of the machine just by changing a little bit the so we, like you're saying, we always need to be looking for opportunities to increase efficiency in the industry.
Yeah, and you know, Wilmer, that's a good point, right? I will add to that because I think it's important. You know, when you look, yes, the way you're conditioning, and you making sure you're properly conditioning, you are having a consistent conditioning process, is the way I call them, is that I'm consistently getting to that 180, 185 degrees, or whatever it is, the feed type, so I can maximize then the use of the feed, of the pellet mill. But then also cooling is important, right, Wilmer? Because obviously, a 0.5% of water left in that feed after it leaves the conditioner, it can have an impact down in the row. So making sure that your cooling is effective, because yes, you know, you want to say, 12% is not, maybe a lot of people say, well, 13% moisture is normal. And I say, if you take 1% of water out of that feed, you are shipping less water to the farm, because water doesn't convert in meat. It's a critical component, though, for the animal, obviously, to have water. But in the feed itself, it's not, because you're not in business to ship water from a feed mill to a farm, right? So those are things that are important to understand. Make sure that that's happening well, that I am properly, if I am post-pellet liquid application, that I'm properly applying those liquids into the feed, either because it's enzymes or it's fat. All those type of things is important. It's critical, obviously, at the end, in the component of that portion, or what you can do to be able to not just be more efficient, but to maximize and find ways to save costs in feed. So yeah, very good. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, and you brought like cooling, and you know, if you are not cooling correctly too, you are, the pellets are gonna break easier, you know, when.
Oh yeah, yeah. But the financial impact, Wilmer, on you shipping water, right? It's tremendously. It's no good thing.
Sometimes just raise like the bed depth in the cooler 1 or 2 inches can make a huge difference, you know, like
a
in the
difference
amount
in
of
impact
motion,
on performance. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Feed Science Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a comment. Thank you for the time, Cesar. And I hope you have a good weekend. And I hope everyone have a blessed day.
Absolutely. You too as well, Wilmer. And thank you again for the opportunity. Thank you all for listening.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.